You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Dylan Saunders. Dylan, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate you contacting me.
Dylan, I saw something on the internet. It was actually a GoFundMe campaign. 7.62 Precision California lawsuit defense. I want to get into that in great detail, as much as you can, of course, because it is a lawsuit and obviously you can't discuss everything. But before we do, for the benefit of the listeners, can you give them a little bit of background about who you are?
Sure. I own 7.62 Precision and I'm located in Wasilla, Alaska. And I grew up in Alaska, mostly in bush villages, sort of a lifestyle combining Tom Sawyer in the 1960s and everything else. A kind of an interesting thing. Grew up without electricity, without running water, on a homestead, and it was a great way to grow up. And since then, I've spent some time in the Southeast U.S. in college and in the military. I ran a ranch in New York for my parents for a year or so. And since then, I've been back in Alaska. My background professionally is that I'm a graphic artist and I'm a writer. I spent some time in the Army as a cavalry scout and later as a sniper in an infantry unit and where I was deployed. So I was injured in Iraq and came back and was trying to figure out how to support my family, how to work. I felt that the things that I knew how to do, I wasn't able to continue with. I wasn't able to remain in the military. So I started doing kind of what I knew, and that was working with firearms. So I started 7.62 Precision as a way to try to pay the bills with the injuries as I was figuring out how to get over that sort of thing. And so we began to do custom work on firearms, and we also began to do some sales, and we ended up being the U.S. distributor for frontline holsters from Israel. And so the majority of things we were selling were holsters. That was the focus of our company as far as sales went. And then we sold some other items like firearms accessories and, of course, magazines for firearms and, of course, the custom finishes as well.
Thank you for explaining that, Dylan. Why Israel?
Well, first of all, Israel is interesting because they've been constantly at war since the formation of their modern nation and actually sometime before that. And so they have developed some really interesting weapon accessories, tactics, and also, of course, the holsters that people in the U.S. aren't really aware of. And so a lot of the things that I used in the military as far as weapon accessories and things like that were actually things that were new for most people in the U.S. military to use, but they had been developed and used in Israel for a long time in certain units like the Navy SEALs, who trained jointly with Israel quite a bit in the past, were using those kind of accessories in Israel as they became aware of it. So a lot of the firearms accessories that we're familiar with that are sort of a new thing in the U.S. military have been used for quite some time prior to that in Israel. Israel is where night sights were developed, for example, tritium night sights. The first reflex optic, like a red dot sight, a reflex optic that was designed for CQB use on a rifle. Of course, reflex optics have been used on airplanes since World War I, but to be mounted on a rifle and used for military use like that, the first one of those optics was, of course, developed in Israel. And the same goes for the holsters. A lot of the holster designs that we're familiar with here, this holster design comes from this U.S. manufacturer, whatever. Those manufacturers saw those designs in Israeli holsters that have been used for years. So the frontline holsters, they're one of the largest and oldest holster manufacturers in the world. And they had like basically zero exposure in the U.S. market. And so I began working in marketing for a company that was importing those holsters. And they were not able to sell those holsters well. They just didn't have experience in that. And I didn't either, but I learned very, very quickly how to market the holsters and how to sell them. And so we worked out an agreement with them to be the sole distributor for most of those holster models.
Okay, great. Thank you, Dylan, for explaining that. I'm going to read here from the GoFundMe page. It says that your company has always made a careful effort to follow all applicable laws while supporting gun owners in the state of California. The city of San Francisco, on behalf of the people of California, is suing your company and several others for selling and advertising magazine repair kits to residents of the state of California. This is not a criminal case, but a misuse of taxpayer money and the court system to attack out-of-state companies and Second Amendment rights. It's political grandstanding using civil lawsuits. Why don't you tell listeners about what this is all about? And what exactly are magazine repair kits, and why does the wonderful sanctuary city of San Francisco have a beef with them and you?
Okay, well, first of all, I tend to use different terminology than the city of San Francisco would use. I would say that magazine for an AR-15 that holds 30 rounds would be considered a standard capacity magazine. That's 20 rounds, 30 rounds. Of course, they were first designed with 20-round magazines, and then 30-rounders came sometime later. But that's a standard magazine for an AR-15. They would call that a large capacity magazine. They call anything over 10 rounds a large capacity magazine. And they claim that somehow the large capacity magazines are much more dangerous. The attorney for the city of San Francisco who's bringing this suit, he said that the only only purpose of these magazines is to kill as many people as quickly as possible. They have no place in our neighborhoods. I would suggest that most likely, if they feel that way, their police shouldn't have 30-round magazines either, or 15-round magazines in their pistols, or 18-round magazines, or 17, or whatever they're carrying. I would suggest that if their police are using more than 10-round magazines, then the only purpose of their police is to kill as many people as quickly as possible. I don't know. So California, some years ago, passed a law that prohibited most people in California from purchasing what they call a large capacity magazine, which would be anything larger than 10 rounds. In the language of that law, they clearly allowed for magazine repair kits to be sold to residents of California and purchased by residents of California in order to keep grandfathered magazines working. Anybody who already had a standard capacity magazine was able to keep that standard capacity magazine and to purchase repair kits so they could use those parts to repair their magazines. Magazines are consumable items in firearms. They wear out, and they're usually one of the first components to wear out. So in order to keep a firearm running, you need to be able to repair your magazines or replace them. Since they couldn't replace them, they were allowed to repair them. And so the language is very, very clear that a magazine repair kit was the parts to a magazine, but disassembled and not assembled, and it was illegal to assemble that kit into a new magazine, but it was legal to take the parts from that kit to repair magazines. Now, one thing I've learned about shooters in California is they tend to be very, very aware of their state and local laws, more so than shooters in a lot of other states. And they tend to be very conscientious about following those laws. And so in dealing with gun owners in California, I've always had a very clear impression that most of the people I was dealing with were going to use anything that they purchased in a legal way. So like really hundreds or thousands of other companies, we began selling magazine repair kits, which were magazines that were completely disassembled. The language on our website made it very, very clear that it was illegal to assemble those parts into a new magazine, that they could only be used to replace worn parts on other magazines. And we made sure that we sold only parts for existing magazines that existed before the ban. So for example, as new models of magazines came out that didn't exist before California banned them, then obviously a repair kit made of parts from those magazines could never be used to repair a pre-existing magazine. So the only magazine repair kits we sold were parts for USGI style magazines that existed prior to their ban, which I think was in the year 2000. And so that's where we were. We sold magazine repair kits. They were specifically allowed under California law. This wasn't something that was just not mentioned by California law in a loophole. Some people have claimed it was a loophole. It wasn't a loophole. It was specifically stated in California law that these repair kits were legal. We sold those. A couple years ago, the state of California changed their law and they banned magazine repair kits. Now, they claim to have banned magazine repair kits. I would argue that if you read the language of the new law, what it really bans is magazine extensions, which would increase the capacity of an existing magazine. But I understood that their intention was to ban the magazine repair kits. So after they banned the magazine repair kits, we stopped selling magazine repair kits. And we did several things. The first thing, of course, is we changed the inventory on our website to zero. And we then, in the back end of the website, we set that item to be a catalog-only item, which means that we can see it in the back end software, but the item doesn't show on the website. We set it to be an item that is not available for purchase from our store, and we set the item category to not display on our website. So as far as I knew, I had made every effort to stop selling those items and to not even display those items as something for sale. So several weeks ago, I was very surprised to get a knock at my door at about 10:30 in the evening and receive a summons stating that I was being sued for selling these kits. So I immediately went to my website, and I thought, well, they had in the lawsuit documentation, they, of course, had a screenshot. And so I went to my website to see how somebody could have seen that, and I couldn't navigate to it on my website because it was set up that way. But what I could do was do an internet search because of the way the backend software of the website was set up. Apparently, if you do an internet search, you could see that item. It was still an item that was not listed for sale. Nobody could order it. The inventory was set to zero, and it had a disclaimer stating that anybody living in the state of California needed to educate themselves on their current laws and stuff like that. So it would be clear to anybody that my intention was not to be selling these kits. I wasn't trying to advertise these kits. I wasn't trying to mislead anybody. And this is actually sort of a common thing. We had had previously a website that was set up in a way that when we discontinued an item and we removed it from stock and removed it from inventory and we thought that it couldn't be seen, that people could still find that item page in an internet search and actually order that item. And so we had some issues with that and actually switched e-commerce software because of that. And so there's things that are on the internet don't really go away. You can still find archive pages. There's ways to find content that's no longer active on the internet. And that's basically what happened here was they found content that was inactive. So in the time period that they are suing us for, we actually didn't sell any magazine rebuild kits. And so had they simply called me, asked if they could order one from me, or even called me and told me that it was the attorney for the city of San Francisco and he wanted to know, he was basically accusing me of selling these things. I would have been willing to provide information, of course, not from my sales records, of course, nothing with any customer information or anything like that, but to prove to him that I was not selling these kits and had not intended for that page to even be visible. But instead of doing that, they simply sued. And it's pretty obvious that their intent is not to keep people from selling magazine kits in the state of California. Their intention is to attack firearms companies and try to put them out of business. And that's why they're using lawsuits rather than criminal charges, because in the case of criminal charges, they would have to prove that a crime had been committed. Well, they can bring a lawsuit and hope to bankrupt a company without actually having to win the lawsuit or without having to provide proof. A lot of companies would just fold as a result. And so it's difficult working with shooters in the state of California. We have a history of supporting shooters in the state of California simply because we've seen so many companies that say they won't do business with California. They won't sell anything to California. They won't ship anything to California. And it's because of things like this. It's because of the misuse of the court systems. It's because their laws are so convoluted and it can be difficult to keep abreast of their laws and to keep from violating a law. They've made it more difficult to ship firearms into California. You have to fill out paperwork with the state of California and basically get permission from the state before you ship a firearm in, which costs a dealer or a distributor a lot of extra work and time. And so the result is they're getting what they want. They're getting dealers to stop working with people in the state of California, which is something we've tried to avoid to do historically because we didn't want to be the ones that stopped supporting these guys. Everybody I've known from California that was a shooter were good people. They're people I enjoyed talking with and being around. And so we wanted to do our part to support these guys who are kind of behind the Iron Curtain there and trying to get along. And we wanted to be the last ones to tell people, you know, you just need to move out of the state. Because if everybody moves out of the state who has certain political views, then the other side is just left with no opposition. So that's where our stand was. And we went through the extra work to deal with people in California. And the result is that we're just happen to be one of the companies that they've decided they're going to try to sue out of existence. And they've indicated that this is just the start of these lawsuits. And they're also suing politicians and other people that they don't agree with as well. So basically, they're trying to impose their political views on other people in other states through use of the courts and lawsuits rather than through other legal or legislative channels.
Thank you, Dylan, for explaining that. Do you happen to know how many other companies are being sued alongside you?
They're suing 5 other companies, and then they listed 50 companies that they listed as Doe 1 through 50, which they said were companies that they would later identify and add to the lawsuit. I don't know what the legalities of that are, but that's what they list in the lawsuits. They're suing 5 companies in this lawsuit, and they sued several companies in an identical lawsuit a year ago. I can't, of course, speak for any of the other companies being sued, but from what I understand about those companies, it was the same sort of thing. They had a page that they had inadvertently, there was a way for people to access that page, but they had no stock. I believe one of those companies says on their website and has for a number of years back that they don't do any sales to the state of California. So again, they're not suing companies that are out there trying to break their laws and shipping stuff into California that they weren't supposed to ship.
Instead of a lawsuit, what they're supposed to do is they're supposed to issue a cease and desist, which they didn't do. So obviously, as you said, they have another agenda. In their lawsuit, what are they asking for?
What they're asking for is, I'm not too clear on it. Because some of the stuff they're saying is unspecified damages. And I would assume that in some of those things in a trial, then they would specify what they want. One thing that they did mention is they want a certain sum per violation of various different things that they say that we violated. And I'm not sure, again, they've accused us of many things in the lawsuit, but the lawsuit is basically for unfair business practices. They've said a number of things. I'm not sure which of those things they would be considering an instance of something that they would be wanting damages for. So I'm not completely clear that if they got what they originally intended to get, I'm not sure what that sum would be at all.
You could still sell stuff to people in the other states, right?
Yes.
Who came up with the idea for the GoFundMe campaign?
That was something that I had decided I should try. I talked to a few people. I was really in a position where I couldn't afford the defense on the personal level. There had been some things that I'd been dealing with in the last couple of years. I'd been out of the state quite a bit. I'd been overseas. So I wasn't in a position to really handle this at all. So basically, the position I was in was that these guys were going to get a default judgment if I couldn't retain a law firm. So what I did was I established a GoFundMe campaign, and I was blown away. People from all over the United States jumped in. I think it was less than a week. We'd raised $10,000, which was our goal. I set the goal low because I wasn't sure how far this would go and where it would go and whether it would actually go to court. So I wanted initially to be able to retain the services of the law firm and then go from there without raising more money than I needed to. And then the other thing that we did, I still have a large inventory, of course, of holsters and magazines and things like that. So what we're doing for the people who donated is that anybody who donated a reasonable amount, about $25 or more, we're asking them to choose a product that they could use or products that they could use equivalent to the value of their donation so that we can send those to them. And that way, in the end, they're getting something for helping us out. And we're not just taking people's money and running off that. The financial investment in this defense is ours as well.
Have you procured an attorney?
I have. We actually are working with a law firm in California that's very highly recommended to us. My dealings with them, they've been very professional and very helpful. So we're pretty pleased about who we chose.
And you've already raised, if this is accurate, you've already raised $11,346 of a $10,000 goal. Did the law firm say what they think you might need in order to fend off this frivolous, what probably could be called a SLAP lawsuit, which is strategic lawsuit against public participation? Did they say how much you might need to fend these creatures off?
They didn't. I think right now all of that is up in the air and dependent on how everything goes. So I don't think that's something that anybody's sure of right now.
And if folks want to help out, they could go to the GoFundMe campaign for 762 Precision California Lawsuit Defense. Anything else you'd want to tell listeners about this, Dylan?
Yeah, just that, you know, we really appreciate everybody who's donated to the campaign. It was a big deal for me, not only financially, but just on the moral side, the support that we received, because I was really, in some ways, kind of overwhelmed by this. I've got a lot going on personally and sort of a redesign of the company and things like this all happening at the same time. And then this, of course, happened right in the middle. So it was just amazing. I mean, we had people donating hundreds of dollars, individuals donating hundreds of dollars. And I was expecting that people would donate $15, $20, $25. Maybe some people would go big and donate $50. But I was just blown away by the support, both monetary and by people sending messages and saying, we're pulling for you in this and everything. It was really amazing to me. We really appreciate it. It really says something about our country, I think, and about shooters across the country. We hear from the anti-gun lobby all the time about the gun lobby and about how the NRA, they claim that the NRA is so powerful because it has all of this special interest money and stuff. The reality is the NRA has the backing of thousands and thousands of really millions of people in America, and that's where their power comes from. It doesn't come from some mysterious shadow entity that gives them all their money. That money comes from individuals, and the support comes from individuals. And we've seen that firsthand with this GoFundMe campaign, that this isn't any kind of special interest groups. It's not gun lobbies. It's not anything but gun owners across the country. Some of them probably aren't gun owners. They're just people that don't want to see the government abuse people like this and stepping up and doing their part. And it's really been an amazing thing for us.
Dylan Saunders, the owner of 7.62 Precision. Dylan, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners, and looking forward to talking to you again real soon.
Hey, I really appreciate it. I appreciate you having us on the show and everything that you guys are doing.